Hello and welcome to the Hornets and Heartbreak podcast. My name is Mark Bernacki and I'm here with my co-host, Tim Rogers. What's up, Tim?
What it do, Liquor Mark?
I'm doing pretty well, man. We are joined today by a longtime journalist for the At The Hive and co-host of At The Hive Live podcast, James Plowright. What's up, James?
Mark, Tim, thank you very much for having me on the Hornets and Heartbreak podcast, which I have to say, I love the name of your podcast because there's two words that go very well together is Hornets and Heartbreak. I'm thinking like if the team gets successful, you're going to have to think of a new name. Well, what if there's no heartbreak anymore? Or will that never be the case?
That will never be the case. Very safe in the name.
For at least like a 5-year period, we should be safe. But if they make it to like the conference finals, I think we'll reconsider. We'll maybe have to change the name.
There will still be heartbreak.
Yeah, we'll still lose that in seven. But so the Hornets have been doing pretty well as of late. Past three games, we've won. The Hawks game on Wednesday was probably one of our best wins, most complete wins of the season. So what did you guys think about that game and what's been going right for the Hornets generally over the past three games, James?
Yeah, so I like to try and break things down to be really simple. So I've got three key things which I think the Hornets have improved last three games. I mean, first thing I'll say is we've played, obviously, an OKC team who are missing loads of people and a New Orleans team missing loads of people. But irrelevant of that, if you kind of look at the statistical profile of what the team has done, three key things is one, they're shooting way better. Two, disruptive defense. Three, transition defense. Like, those are the three things that if you break them down, what I think the team has done kind of best since the All-Star break, they made a push, but especially over the last three games. I mean, the disruptive defense, like, they're playing a lot bigger with having PJ playing at the four and Miles Bridges playing mostly at the three. And with that, like, opponents are turning the ball over more than ever. I think since the All-Star break, the Hornets turnover percentage would be leading the league for the entire season. So they're really getting out in transition. That's leading to like incredibly efficient offense, which just gone absolutely on fire from beyond the arc, you know, good shooting. I think that's helped getting out in transition, playing against an unset defense. And then also, really interestingly, since the All-Star break, the Hornets' offensive rebound percentage has just completely dropped. It's like they've said, you know what, we tried to like crash the glass for a while. That's not working for us. We're going to go Steve Clifford style. We're going to get back on D and we're going to make teams beat us. And those things have kind of contributed to a pretty good kind of statistical last 10, 15 games or so. So the progress, even though there's been some restraint losses in there, has been very real.
Cool.
Yeah, I completely agree. I would describe the Hawks win as just like a big boy professional basketball win. You know, it wasn't from unsustainable shooting. You know, we only shot, you know, 32% in that game. We had less than 10 turnovers as a team, 9, which is very important. And yeah, as you said about game or defense and just the length, that was one of the first games where you could really feel like, man, Kelly Oubre is really long. Like, you know, obviously he makes bonehead decisions. But yeah, with the trapping the tray, it's like, oh, yeah, we do have three playable wings with serious length here and LaMelo. Yeah, so that was nice to see.
I think, you know, all teams are built differently to stop different types of players. Like, and with the Hornets' lack of size, but kind of generally pretty long, like good wingspan on the perimeter, like Trae Young in that kind of like getting him in a pocket off that screen is kind of quite like one thing that I think the Hornets, it's a plan that they've got the personnel to do. Like, what they don't have is the personnel to go against like Jokic and Bede, like these massive big bruisers who live in the paint. But Trae Young poses a different challenge, which for some can be really challenging. But for the Hornets, actually probably one of the easier NBA superstars that they can kind of adjust to.
That's yeah, a good point.
I would be a little afraid to run with that game plan back to back, like in a play-in game. All those open threes, don't know if they would go our way. Hopefully we didn't show our hand too early. But yeah, as far as scoring goes, Trae really did not have a chance that game. Did have 15 assists, 10 in the first half. But yeah, that's a roll of the dice in a one game play-in.
So some things I had for what's been going right. It feels like PJ's been playing better, but I checked the stats and he's averaging like the exact same things as always. But over the past like 10 games, it does feel like he's improved. And obviously he had a great game against the Hawks, scoring what was like 11 points in a couple minutes there at the end. Miles Bridges, 11 for 18 from three over the past three games. Obviously that's a small sample size, but that has contributed. Like in previous games, they had DeAndre Jordan on Miles Bridges, just like backing off of him, letting him shoot from three. And if he can knock down those shots, that opens up the offense for other players. It's not just the scoring he gets from those three-pointers, but also opening up the floor for other people. And then Mason Plumlee, left-handed free throws. I think that's one of the keys to success over the past few games.
I think Eric Collins has taken a lot of joy from that. I think the Hornets players have taken a lot of joy from that. These fun little stories you get in like the midst of long 82-game seasons, which you get so used to just like the rigmarole of like, oh, it's another game. And then like things like that are just always like fun, engaging storylines. But your comment on Miles, I completely agree. The three-point shooting, I can't say it looks any different. I can't say he's taking any different shots. It's just going in, if I'm being really honest. Yeah. You know, it's kind of been due to, we know he's been a better shooter than he's shown this year. But on PJ Washington, you're right. There is no one who is more inconsistent. But then when you look at the stats over like a period of games or over a season, he looks like the most consistent player there is. But he swings from quarter to quarter of effect. But I do definitely feel he's changed how he's played, especially since the Harrell trade. He's moving to the four more. And he just became at one point like, he was like Davis Bertans out there. Like he just took above the break threes and that was it. And now I like his mixing his game up more. I much prefer the PJ we're seeing, even if the stats aren't that much different. I like the kind of offensive menu that he's choosing from now much more than I did earlier in the year.
Agreed.
Yeah, and I think it was easy after last season to just like slot him in as the backup five. But I'll give Borrego props. I have liked him as a power forward. I think that was the right move. Definitely better than starting Kelly. PJ's coming to his own. And yeah, he just... He can be, I'm never frustrated with PJ, but yeah, when you see those flashes of, man, he had four threes in the third quarter, that's awesome. Yeah. Wish it happened a little more involved.
Where were you two both? I mean, obviously there was kind of a two sides of the thought on PJ at the trade deadline. There's one side, let's keep him now. You know, he's got another year of being under contract and his rookie contract. And then there was the other side that was like, actually, you know, we're not going to be able to bring him back with the way that other contracts are looking. Like, he's only ever going to be a backup. We should trade him now while he's got value. I was probably leaning towards that point of view, but, like, not just doing it for no reason. There'd have to be something of value coming back. But where were you two both on that?
So I do think he's kind of the odd man out with, like, our young core, right? With him and Miles Bridges basically playing the same position. Maybe PJ's a little bit bigger. But it does feel like he's maybe not going to be here at past next season. So I agree with you that trading him while he had value made sense, but maybe we couldn't get anything good enough in the market. We definitely were shopping him around. But yeah, it just would have to be dependent on what we get back. Like I saw trades floated for Jakob Poeltl. I'm not sure I was interested in that for like PJ and like Kai Jones or something like that. That was being floated around. I'm not sure.
I think it was that.
Definitely not all of that, right?
No.
So, but like Miles Turner, I would have been interested for sure. That's been floated around Hornets Twitter for like it seems like a decade, right?
Yeah, since before PJ was drafted.
yeah, but I'm not sure that was actually out there. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see for next season, like what happens with PJ. But he's been playing better lately. I'm not as low on him as I was like 2 months ago, I think.
I would say so. I think it's funny, you know, like a couple weeks ago when the Harden trade happened, the Sixers beat up on the Knicks a couple times. And like, you know, from a thousand feet away, it was just like, why are they getting so excited for these just rollover games? And then this, you know, like we beat up on New Orleans without anybody. We beat up on OKC. And I'm just like, this is a turning point in our season. I was like, you know, this is definitely just a different team. So it is kind of hard to gauge how important these are. But one big takeaway is I think LaMelo has been playing some of the best ball, really just of his career. Again, hard to judge against these defenses, but just seems so much more locked in. Isn't like meandering towards the basket, waiting for something to open up. We'll just make the quick pass. I think he's been awesome.
I think, you know, we've talked about Isaiah Thomas. We've not mentioned his name yet, but
yeah,
I think he really seems to have had an impact, it feels, just from the interviews you see with the other players, the coaching staff. You know, there was that one little clip from the Hornets of him talking in the locker room to Melo, talking about it being one of the best games that he played. And I'm not saying that hasn't happened before. Like, it could have just that they had a camera in the locker room that time. So it's like, you know, no one's ever talking to Melo in the locker room like that before. Like, I'm sure it has. I'm sure Smith did that and other things. But I think, you know, it's an 82-game season. LaMelo Ball, has he ever played 82 games, like, as a prospect in total? He was in Lithuania. He was in high schools moving around. Like, I don't know if he's ever played that number of games total from the age of, like, 13 to 18, and he's now playing in, like, one season after getting injured last year. It's obviously games getting more important now. Games are coming down to crunch time. I think he's seen a lot of different defenses, what they're throwing at him. And it's hard for young players. Like, let's remember, this is his age 20 season. It's just hard for you to be consistent all the way through. So I think the All-Star break probably gave him a little bit of a break, which is good. You've got some weapons coming back from the Hornets from injury after a time where, you know, they're not able to probably focus on him quite as much. Rozier's been so good recently. He's probably been the first name on the scouting report. So, yeah, it's been good to see LaMelo have a bit of a bounce back. If he could stop with these stupid fouls, that would be great, because then he can play more minutes. And the more minutes he plays, the better the Hornets are. You know, it's not rocket science. But at the same time, like, Borrego's got to hold him accountable and also protect him from himself.
I think that's a good point you make about IT coming in and, like, maybe providing, like, some leadership for the team and leadership for Melo in particular. And you mentioned, like, maybe Ish Smith has said similar things to him. I don't think LaMelo's listening to Ish Smith as much as he is Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas has obviously had, you know, like, that almost MVP season, or, like, fifth in MVP voting, two-time All-Star. So Isaiah's done a little bit more at a higher level than Ish has. And I do think he's had an impact on the team. Since we've signed him, we've been better, not just on the court, but off the court. I like that point by you that he's definitely a veteran presence in the locker room. So, how do you think the Hornets season is going so far, James? We're sitting right at 500. Is this season a success, a disappointment, or are we exactly where we should be right now?
So I don't want to sound like a team employee here, right? But I think it's an overwhelming success. Big picture. It's hard when you zoom in. I can understand. I've been there. Like, if people listen to me on my podcast, like, there's been dark days recording that this season. But, like, big picture, the over under for the season was 38.5. like, if the Hornets go 4-8 in the last 12 games, they'll hit the over. So they're kind of right around where they should be in terms of record. Now, the other thing it says, a lot of Hornets fans will say, well, we've had injuries. Actually, the Hornets have had the third least injuries in the entire NBA. Like, the only teams who had less injuries are Houston and Minnesota, who's, like, have had zero whatsoever, and Minnesota Timberwolves are absolutely flying. Obviously, one of the big injuries to Hayward is a long-term one. It's looking to be. Yeah. But they have been largely healthy, which has been good because we've been able to see development. We've not had LaMelo Ball, Miles Bridges getting injured and kind of taking away that, oh, he's in the middle of a great season and now they're unavailable. So that's been a positive as well. I think Borrego's been really able to explore the kind of studio space with lineups, how things can look. It's not like he's just been forced to put players out there because they're available for large portions of the season. We've got Bridges, who's a most improved candidate and has played for an All-Star in stretches this year, not for the whole season, but in stretches. Terry Rozier is keeping on, as Eric Collins would say, or Delcro would say. Like, after getting his contract extension, there's not been a drop off there. And the kind of only guys I think you could really say I'm disappointed in how the season has gone for them is probably maybe Gordon Hayward, partially down to his injury. But even before that, he wasn't great to start the year. People forget he wasn't great, but the impact was good. PJ Washington, and probably like second half of the season, Kelly Oubre. Like, other than that, you look around the roster and you're like, yeah, like, everyone's taken steps or shown something, apart from maybe a Smith and Vernon Carey, who, hey, they're no longer here. So big picture, I think it's a success. The big thing that people will look at is, well, we're still 10th in the East. You know, it's the same as last year. We're not making any progress. Yet, look at the league. Like, the Cavs, the Bulls, the Raptors are all way better The Hawks, who made the Eastern Conference Finals last year, are below the Hornets. The Wizards and the Knicks were in the play-in and playoffs last year. They're way below Charlotte. The league, especially the East, has got way deeper. And for Charlotte to be able to be still 10th and still 500, one, it's a better kind of record percentage-wise. Obviously, last season was affected by injury. But you can't just judge it by where you finish in the East because there's so much wider context to what's going on.
I like the point you make about Melo and Miles' improvement. Like, if we take away one thing from this season, it's that both of those players got way better this year. And you say Miles Bridges is the most improved candidate. I think LaMelo is like sixth or something on the odds for most improved player. Wow. Or maybe not sixth, but like 10th or he's somewhere in that range, right?
I have a Miles Bridges preseason bet of most improved, which is 88-1, which I'm still holding on to, which I'm thinking Jar's going to win it now. But right. Like halfway through the season, I was like, it's a lock. Like I'm going to win it. yeah. But no, it's slipped away slowly over the year.
Yeah, you would need a Ja Morant injury like 2 months ago for that to have happened. Yeah, yeah. So he is going to get that award, I think. But like both of those players are obviously the most important players long term for the Hornets, and they've both gotten better. So I like that point. I would say we're pretty much where we should be. You know, I wouldn't have quite the same level of optimism, but it's refreshing on the podcast. We do call the podcast Hornets and Heartbreak, so. Tim and I have had several pretty negative episodes as of late. So I like that point. And big picture, like you said, we have gotten better. I think the way the season played out, where we started so well and were, you know, seeded at like almost the sixth seed for a while there. And since we've slipped and had this bad stretch, it feels worse. But if you zoom out and just say, hey, the Hornets are 570 games into the season, I would take that before the season. So, yeah, we're doing just all right.
I think maybe yeah. Hornets, heartbreak, and hope. Maybe that yeah. should be yeah. the addition.
That's
three H's. I like it.
That could work. And yeah, I would look at us. You know, if you told us before the season we'd be a top five offense and a bottom five defense, I would say that's pretty in line. You know, no big surprise there. I love your point about the East. The East did just get so much better. You know, everyone thought the Cavs were at least a year away. I would say the Bulls have played, you know, even though they've had injuries, their record is better than anyone would expect. And one thing that jumped out to me, in our 35 wins, we shoot 40% from three. In our 35 losses, we shoot 31% from three. Just kind of a make or miss league, and especially with, you know, such high variance shooters with, you know, Kelly, Miles, PJ. Not a big surprise. Obviously, that's not the only thing. But, yeah, you know, 2 years ago, I think it's fair to say we had the least talented roster in the league. And now we have this and potentially two more picks between, you know, 13 and 18, depending on if the Pels make it. I'd be pretty excited.
No, it's a great point. Like, the Hornets don't have a steady, like, oh, well, he'll get you 20 points tonight. Like kind of guy that they can just throw the ball to. Like, even when they had Al Jefferson, that's what was so great about him. You could have a bad shooting night, but Al Jefferson could carry you because you've got an inside scoring presence. And the Hornets are allergic to scoring at the rim. They take a bunch of attempts there. Like I think they're top five in attempts at the rim, but they are terrible at converting. And, you know, they drive to kick a lot generally, and other teams beginning to catch on at that. And no, like apart from Miles Bridges, there's and maybe Harrell now, the addition of the deadline, there's not many plus finishes inside. And that's just why you become a reliant on the jump shooting teams. Even like the Warriors teams, everyone always says, oh, the Steph Curry, Klay Thompson Warriors teams from the dynasty run, like they were just jump shooting team. And if you look at the stats, they like scored in the paint at will because they leveraged their outside shooting to get to the rim. Hornets haven't quite mastered that yet.
Agree. Yeah, that's one area for LaMelo to specifically improve on. His finishing at the rim is pretty rough. But Tim, you want to say something?
Oh, no, I was going to zero in on LaMelo for that too. Yeah, always. That's like the number one thing I look for every couple of weeks. Like, okay, what's his 2-point percentage at? You know, what's his at the rim? Because, you know, I think once he's able to do that, and I think that finishing is something that generally for guards gets better. You know, like you would think, oh, when they're young, they're more athletic. But really, it does continue to get better until they're about 30, 31. So, yeah, if he can just finish that craft, that's going to be the big thing for him. Because, you know, it's hard to be so reliant on the three right now for scoring. Yeah, so if he can start getting to the line a little more and put on some muscle, think that's really the next step for Melo.
This is a good segue into the next thing we want to talk about, which is sort of power rankings for point guards in the league over the next 5 years. So Tim and I have a couple recurring arguments on the podcast. One of them, my favorite one, is Ja Morant versus Trae Young. Who would you take for the next 5 years, James, between those two players?
So I do think it's close. I don't think I'm like a harsh one side. The most common NBA answer you'll get out there from people who follow basketball closely is Ja Morant. I'd love to zag, but I'd be lying. So I am going to say Ja Morant. And I think the kind of key differences really for me is actually some like the non-basketball stuff. Like Ja Morant as a leader, from things you hear from the Grizzlies organization, from his teammates. Like even when he got injured in the year, he like traveled to every game, road or home. I heard Jaren Jackson talking about it the other day on the Zach Lowe podcast. And he was being like, yeah, we need him there. Like even though he's not playing, he's just like everything for our team. We need him. And Trae Young doesn't have that effect on his team, like in my opinion. Like you heard when the previous coach was there, Lloyd Pierce, there are issues with him and John Collins. I think like Trae is a guy, like when things aren't going well, maybe Trae isn't going to be the guy to bring you together. So I just think from the poor like culture point of view, I think I take Ja. And then also just the defense as well. Trae Young, no matter what, just due to his size, athletic traits, will never be a plus defender. Ja Morant isn't a good defender, but he's at least got tools that he can be kind of better or help on the defensive side. He can get back on these transition, these blocks. And like we saw the other day, like I don't know if you can control Ja like Charlotte controlled Trae the other night, because Ja's such an elite athlete. He can just initiate contact and break through those little gaps. And so I think it's close, but I'm siding Ja. And I don't know which one of you is team Ja here. So I don't know who I'm siding with. So I'm not picking one of you over the other here.
You're picking me over Tim. And Tim, go ahead and lay out the case for the zag, because as I explained to Tim on the phone yesterday, I was like, 98% of people disagree with you, Tim. Like a lot of people would pick Ja. And he's been, you know, he said Trae before the season. I think before the season it made way more sense. But then 70 games into this year, the take's just looking worse and worse. But he still could be right. Like, you know, you never know what's gonna happen over the next 5 years. We could just be a product of the moment with Ja having like a near MVP level season. So Tim, go ahead.
Yeah. You know, obviously if this persists for two more years, I will start to change. I'm gonna dig my heels in a little bit. So my argument for Trae Young, I view in the same way that center is kind of the heart of the defense, and it's more important to have, you know, a defensive minded center. For the point guard, I would say it's 80%, 90% offense. And I think Trae Young is the second best offensive point guard in the league, leading the league in assist percentage right now. Granted, he does hold the ball a lot, but I just look at it like this. So Ja Morant shoots 70% at the rim. Trae is about 64%. And Trae Young is more efficient from everywhere else on the court. I would say he's a better passer. You are almost guaranteed to have a top five offense while he's on the floor, regardless of talent. The Grizzlies right now are actually scoring slightly better with Ja off the floor. I think that's, you know, due to bench lineups. I don't think that's a sustainable thing. But yeah, I mean, Trae Young could just be the one man that could run a top five offense, no question. I think he's just amazing on offense. But you're right about defense. It's pretty terrible.
Yeah. Oh, we can't hear you, James, for some reason.
Sorry. I will say Trae just led his team to an Eastern Conference Finals, to a MSG road wins in the playoffs. Like, Ja hasn't done any of that yet. Ja's done some great stuff, but like he's made it through multiple rounds to Eastern Conference Finals, performed massive on the biggest stage. And everything suggests that Ja should have a similar ability to do that. And not someone who's ever shied away and has raised his game at the best times. But Trae's done that. And he's shown that already at the age of 21, 22, when he did that last season. So that was something that I took into account, is that Trae's probably proven a little bit more in the playoffs so far. But yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I will say a lot of the backlash I have is just like the fact that, you know, Mark said like 98%. I wouldn't be shocked if Ja ends up being a better player, but like It is close. Like, it's not like some, oh, man, yeah. Obviously. And I'm a little lower on Ja than a lot of people, I'll admit. Maybe do. You know, I'm sure there's some bias in there. But my hot take is I would take Shai Gilgeous-Alexander for the next 5 years over Ja.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know about that one, Tim. I don't know about that one. Okay. So where do we have LaMelo in these rankings? You have LaMelo under those three, Tim, or under just Ja and Trey?
I have him above Ja.
Part
of that is built into the fact that I think that in a weird way, and this was not, didn't seem like the case at all coming out of college or coming out of Australia. I think he's like the most malleable and like, you know, has the most, could fit on the most teams, I would say, the most scalable of any of these players. I could see LaMelo being like the perfect number two on a championship team. If the defense gets there, which of course is a big if, but, you know, really solid catch and shoot shooter, could run half court offense if needed, good size, can rebound, should age well, and he'll be 26 in 5 years, five seasons after this. And Trae Young will be about 29, Ja will be 28. So I think that plays into it. I really like the idea you could put anyone around LaMelo.
So wait, just give me your rankings one more time, Tim.
I have Trey. Oh, really? Yeah, Trey, then LaMelo, then Ja, or then SGA, then Ja Morant.
SGA before Ja Morant is offensive. But I have Ja, Melo, Trey Young, Kyrie Irving, 29 years old. I don't know. I feel like he will still be good in 5 years. I feel like his game will age decently.
And where do you have Tyrese Halliburton?
Oh, he's 11th. He's 11th. So I went Ja, Melo, Trey, Kyrie, and then SGA. Watching him against us has been very, very enjoyable. He gets to the rim and finishes like no other player. Like
just walks there. It's so cool.
I also didn't consider Luka a point guard. I don't know where y'all stand on that, but he could be a point guard. I'm not sure.
Yeah, he could be. I tried to interpret this as a more traditional sense of the word, yeah. But yeah, you're right. He absolutely could be. I think this is really hard. When you guys sent me this, I was like the guys I had in my initial short list, a couple of guys you haven't mentioned, like DeJounte Murray, Tyrese Maxey, actually playing really well for the Sixers this year. Darius Garland, who makes my top five. He just comes in at fifth. I think for me, it was really tough between maybe him and DeJounte Murray. But there's a lot of, I mean, there's always a lot of point guard talent in the league. I think we always say like there is at the moment. There always is, because there's just more guys who are between 6 foot and 6'4" who exist, who play basketball and develop skills.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that stands out for me with LaMelo, which makes him so different to everyone else, is one, I just think he is completely self-confident. I do not think he will ever doubt himself, no matter if he goes 0 for 50. Like he does not bother. He's unconscious, which I think is a great attribute to have. I think the other big thing for me is the defense and his size. So when you're talking about someone who's legit like 6'8", good size wingspan, he's still, like we talked about, you know, doesn't really know what to do with it on defense at the moment. He can't keep anybody in front of him whatsoever. But you look at these guys, Trey, Darius Garland, Ja Morant, like they're small, like they're small players. If they're getting switched on to 6'6" wings, you know, the defense needs to scramble to find a way to work around them. If LaMelo gets stronger and improves his defensive focus and actually really buys into that side of it, LaMelo couldn't just be an okay defender. He could be a plus defender. Like, he's got the tools to do that. He's got the basketball IQ to do that. It's just whether he can, you know, there's been a lot of guys probably his size who think, oh, he could be a great defender. And like Russell Westbrook's a great example. Like, he was an athletic freak. Played really hard, strong, physical, agile. He never really was as good on defense as you kind of thought he should be when he was younger. I'd take that gamble on Melo right now because I just think he's got really high ceiling on that end.
I like that. I like that point. Like, all of them offensively are exceptional. Like, well, Melo has this passing ability. Trey Young can run an offense. Ja has the athleticism, but defensively, you're right. He has the highest upside of those three. SGA is similar in that he could be a very, very good defender. I like that point by you, James.
It's where the dream is that we team him up with DeJounte Murray. That's just my fantasy lineup. God, that would be so fun. So much length.
Yeah, he had the alley-oop to him in the All-Star game.
Maybe when Pop retires, he can do a favor with Borrego, you know, just trade. Like, I think the Spurs traded Theo Ratliff to the Charlotte Bobcats for a second round pick, which never ever like actually conveyed. It was like top 55. They essentially just gave Theo Ratliff to Charlotte because they felt a little bit sorry for us. And if they could do the same thing with DeJounte Murray, that would be great. Although I think he might have a bit of a higher cost.
Let's also remember that Larry Brown then played Theo Ratliff over Tyson Chandler that season.
Oh, yes. Yes, he did.
Oh,
yeah. Those six fouls were important against Dwight Howard in the playoffs.
Yeah.
The good old days.
Thank God Larry Brown is not here anymore.
So one of the more disappointing things from this season that I want to mention real quick, James Bouknight shares the same name as you, James, has had a very disappointing rookie season. Mostly due to just lack of playing time, but also hasn't been that great when he's been playing. And Tim was texting me during the Thunder game, like, oh, we got to add Trey Mann to the list of rookies that we'd rather have than James Bouknight, as Trey Mann was hitting a bunch of threes in that first half. So Tim, I'll let you take the lead on this. This was your idea. How many rookies do you have in total over Bouknight at this point?
So let's go with the guys that were picked after Bouknight. For the record, would have everyone in front of him other than Davion Mitchell. I have Moses Moody, Sengun, Trey Murphy III, Isaiah Jackson, Herb Jones. And then these are more question marks with Trey Mann, Cam Thomas, JT Thor, Io on the Bulls, and Josh Primo. So in total, 20.
A lot of people, yeah. What about you, James? What did you complete this exercise of thinking about all the rookies you'd rather have?
Yeah, there's quite a long list. look, I when it comes to draft stuff, I'm very into the draft. As someone who's covered the Hornets since like 2010, I've had to be into the draft because otherwise there would be no point to exist. Mm. So I've scouted the last probably three or four drafts pretty heavily. I had Bouknight actually ranked 15th on my big board, and I had Kai Jones ranked just ahead at 14th. So when we kind of came out the night with Bouknight 11th and Kai Jones 19th, whatever we selected him, I was kind of like, well, like, I disagree with both picks, but altogether it kind of makes sense. Mm. But yeah, in terms of currently, for guys picked after Bouknight, I would have Sengun, Jalen Johnson, Isaiah Jackson. I'd actually have Kai Jones ahead of Bouknight. If I could only have one of them right now, if you offered me, I'd probably take Kai Jones, Herb Jones. And then I had a couple of question marks in like Io and Bones Highland as well. So obviously all the guys who went before him, like you said, I'd actually probably prefer to have Davion Mitchell as well, though. I'd probably include him. I'd probably keep him
there. I don't even blame you. Yeah.
Yeah. like this team would really like a good defensive guard. Like he could potentially play on this team. Yeah, it's been a disappointing season for Bouknight. I think there's some, I want to start positive. Firstly, his shooting's been better than I thought. His defense has been better than I thought. And I think he's a better passer. Like in summer league, we saw it more. Like he was actually had really good vision. And made some really high level passes, which you probably didn't see during his time at UConn. So like some of my biggest concerns coming in was literally his ability to shoot and pass. And those I'm less worried about now. What I probably underrated was his ability to play within a wider team construct. And he struggled in that in both summer league, both in the G League, both playing for the Hornets. Like, I think he's been very used to him having the ball and having to do something. And this is the NBA now. You're on the floor with a lot of other good players. You don't have to play like that. How can you play for the people? He is a good cutter, but he doesn't always seem to do it. And then the other thing is just like, he's got, I don't know if it's a poor motor or mistake prone, but I like watched one of his G League games and I did a bunch of clips on this. And there was probably 10, 12 mistakes during that G League game that if I watch Cody Martin, he would probably make less mistakes in a month than he made in that one game. And that was the situation. Like, they were just complete brain farts where you're like, what are you doing, Bouknight? Like, you can't do this in an NBA game, never mind a G League game.
Yeah, I completely agree, especially what you said as far as playing within a system. He's a ball stopper. You know, just kind of likes to, even if he has an open shot, he almost likes to hold it for a second. It's almost like he's just happy to have the ball. I've been a little disappointed with his finishing. It looks very good, but doesn't always go in. Wonder about his foul drawing technique. So I agree with you on having Kai Jones over Book. Do you think that Jones will start to get significant minutes as soon as next season?
I think he really could. And I noted a press conference that Borrego had probably just before the All-Star break, where he even referenced what Kai Jones has been doing in the G League recently and kind of raised his eyebrows as he said it. And he was like, he's been playing really well. And yeah, last 10 games with Kai Jones in the G League have been really impressive. I've been able to watch quite a few of them. He's making way less mistakes. He's just essentially, they've simplified the game for him. Whereas before at Texas and Summer League, you saw him dribbling between the legs, taking pull-up threes, and like playing power forward. He is now playing strictly the five, and he is a lob-catching, screen, rim-running big who gets up and down in transition and will take a three like if he has to and the shot clock's coming down. But interestingly, they're kind of getting him to move away from the three, which is strange because normally in the G League, you encourage people to try things out, but I think they want him to gain some confidence and to play a role that's translatable to the NBA. And yeah, he still struggles with like any overweight kind of like 29-year-old G League vet he seems to struggle with, who just punishes him inside and gets 100 rebounds and finishes over him. So that's the way he needs to improve, is his strength really. But look, I don't think like Nick Richards is still probably ahead of him in the pecking order at the moment, but we've seen guys go from kind of being like rookies playing in the G League to suddenly being in the rotation pretty quickly here. We've seen that with Jalen McDaniels, Cody Martin, Devonta Graham. I think next year, Kai Jones, no, he's definitely shown some stuff in the second half of this G League season, which has been impressive to me. So I really like what I've seen from Kai, and I definitely think he could be getting rotation minutes next year, depending on how the rest of the summer breaks.
And what are your thoughts on like Borrego's handling of the rotation in terms of the rookies? Obviously, that's been like pretty consistent for Borrego throughout his tenure, playing rookies not that many minutes. We saw it with LaMelo last year. We've seen it sort of consistently with those rookies. But I think this year there's been like the most backlash for not playing the rookies because it's been the most extreme with, you know, drafting Book Knight at 11. You certainly expected him to play more than he has. And Kai Jones has really never gotten any run this year. Like, what are your thoughts just generally on that strategy?
Look, I think there are, you know, Borrego will be the first to admit there are things that he could have done better this year and there are some improvement. Playing the rookies, quite frankly, I think criticism is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. We're talking about a Hornets era where we're drafting players, developing them, and they're becoming good NBA players. Like, that is something we are now doing on a consistent basis. Like, there's been many times over the last 2 years where you look out and there are five Hornets draft picks on the floor. You look back at the Steve Clifford, Mike Dunlap era, Malik Monk, Frank Kaminsky, Noah Vonleh, Cody Zeller, Miles Bridges. Like, you know, these guys didn't play at all and didn't even get better when they did get chances. Like, the Hornets have made a very substantial shift in investing in their G League. You know, it wasn't a surprise that Borrego came from with a Spurs background where they were really using the Austin Spurs as a developmental tool and has implemented that. And, you know, the G League head coach was Jordan Sarenkamp. Jordan Sarenkamp. He was the assistant video coordinator. He's been really close with the team over the last couple of years. It's a really, like, development is the lifeblood of the organization. It's a quote Borrego uses constantly. How can you criticize him for the work that he's done over the past 3-4 years and the work that he's doing now for developing rookies? I just really can't get there. I think that's one thing, not just Borrego, actually. I think the organization as a whole has got really right. One little frustrating thing, I think, is Book Knight made him not played more G League games this year. And I think that's partly been due to injury, which has been a shame because you just don't want those players in that awkward position where you're like, you're too good to play G League, but not good enough to play NBA, because that's where you just sit. And you don't practice in the NBA in the season. Like, you have shoot rounds, that's it. Shoot rounds and film study. And trying to develop with just those things is so much harder than going down and playing. So, yeah, I really like what they've done. Like, realistically, with Thor, Scotty Lewis, Kai Jones, Buck Knight, not all of them are going to hit off. Like, you drafted Nick Richards, Kerry, you kept one of them, okay? Of those four, probably two. If you get two out there who can become NBA rotation players, you've done well. Right now, JT Thor is probably the closest out of all of them to getting rotation minutes, mainly because he kind of more fits, I think, what this team needs. But let's not forget, like, Buck Knight is still talented. He's going to get opportunities. I think how they structure the offseason could be really interesting because, like you say, it's a packed wing play at the moment with, you know, Isaiah Thomas is a scoring guard off the bench, Kelly Oubre, Terry Rozier. Where is Buck Knight going to fit into that? He's probably not this season, but going forward, absolutely. If they can keep him in the system, keep him in Charlotte over summer, I think they've got, you know, an opportunity to keep developing and play well.
For full disclosure, Tim and I have definitely been in the camp of, like, play Buck Knight more this year. But, okay, you know, I also agree, like, that you can't really critique Borrego in the way that we've developed players. But, like, you know, before we signed Isaiah Thomas, I was thinking when we got rid of Smith, maybe it would free up some minutes for Buck Knight. And I was disappointed that he hasn't played as much since that's happened. I don't think he's played at all since that's happened. And, you know, I would like to see him out there, but that's just my personal preference. And I don't necessarily, like, disagree with it. You know, he's obviously had some off the court issues as well.
So it depends. Like, I guess what were your hopes for the season? Were your hopes for the season that the Hornets should be in the lottery again? They should play young guys and develop? Or were you hoping to come into the season being we need to push for playoffs? Because what your kind of view is that is, I think, obviously definitely frames your view of the Buck Knight situation, which,
yeah.
So it'd be good, like, it'd be good to get kind of your insight on that, really.
Yeah. So I think Tim's more of, like, this year doesn't matter as much. I would love to make the playoffs this year because it's just been so long. And I would love to make the postseason. I think Tim's more of the view that, I mean, Tim, you can step in here if I'm wrong, but I think Tim's more of the view that, like, if we got another lottery pick, that'd be great. Although that doesn't seem likely at this point, but yeah, I completely agree that, like, if you were playing more minutes, that would be, you know, we'd have a couple more losses. So obviously there's a trade-off there, but
that's the thing.
His development's been disappointing this year. And when you draft a player at 11th, I think you just expect a little bit more from his playing time.
Injuries haven't helped him either. Mm-hmm. I mean, after they made the Ish Smith trade, he had a hand injury? He definitely had something that he was out a game and then he played, but you could tell even when he was playing, he was not healthy. Like, he was feeling his hand, he was missing shots that he would normally make. So I don't think that helped him. Then he got this neck injury out of nowhere as well, which, you know, if there had been opportunity, he's not got it. So I think since the trade deadline, he's essentially not been healthy at all. Mm-hmm. And that's not been a great opportunity for him. But like, if I'm Borrego and I'm trying to win games, I just don't know who I play him over right now. Yeah. Cody Martin is really important for this team. I know he's limited. The only reason I play Buck Knight is if I'm, like, developing players and not trying to win games. And I just don't think that's in kind of this season and the contention they're in. I actually understand you can make the argument to say, well, we're going to make the play-in now. Let's just do it anyway. But, like, in the real NBA world, it's just not how coaches kind of think that way. They don't think that far forward because they'll probably get fired by the time that play is good. So they just think about, like, the right now. I thought he'd get rotation minutes this year. I thought at some point he'll break in. And, you know, it might take some time. And when he has got minutes, he's not really taken his opportunity. And that's why I think it's, you know, he's not demanded, oh, you've got to give this guy more minutes. I think there's, like, one game where he hit, like, five or six threes.
Sacramento.
Yeah. Like, that was, you like, oh, is this the time? But every other time he's got, like, proper rotation minutes, he's not been efficient. He's not been great. And I think at that point, you kind of just be like, you've not taken those opportunities with two hands. You've not grabbed them quite enough to force your way in ahead of some of the other guys.
Yeah, I agree. I was a little frustrated at the beginning of the season, but as time has gone on, I guess maybe I've just accepted it. But also, I think that Borrego has made the right moves. Like, you know, looking back, Cody Martin was just better, you know, the first 2-3 months of the season. Obviously helps when you're shooting 50% from three. But yeah, you know, Cody Martin and Ish Smith, those are two guys where a coach like Borrego, you feel safe. Like, you know, those guys aren't going to cost you your job by giving them 20 minutes a game. They're just stalwarts of, you know, NBA benches. And yeah, as the season's gone on, I've more and more sympathized with James Borrego, old Big Jim. And it's disappointing for Book Knight. But at the same time, yeah, like you should be able to beat out Ish Smith. Like it shouldn't be that big of a problem for you if you're that good. So yeah, I think he's, you know, hopefully he goes into the offseason and is ready to work.
And in the games that the Charlottes like struggled, where they're giving up 130 points or they're not getting back in defense, they're not rebounding, there's not many times we've been like, this team really needs a like a thin scoring guard off the bench who's like high volume. Like you've been like, this team needs rebounding, this team needs defense. Like those are the things that you said. And that's why I think you've got JT Thor like getting minutes. Like if James Book Knight was JT Thor's position and skill set, I think he would have got more minutes. So I think a lot of that, what this team lacks isn't necessarily what Book Knight gives, which I'm fine with because I'm all about drafting for talent. Don't worry about the fit. Just take the player, figure it out later. So I'm glad that you've not just picked someone for that reason, but it also does create, pose some challenges during the season.
Lots of James. James is James Book Knight, James Plowright, James Borrego. Y'all should all connect.
maybe a podcast with the three of us. I volunteered to host it. That'd be fun. I don't know if Borrego and Book Knight would be up for that though.
Yeah, I'm sure they'd love to, James.
If Book Knight wants to be in the same room with Borrego after going at him, do you think Kai Jones will be a five when he gets when he starts playing NBA minutes, or do you think we'll start him off at the four?
I think he'll probably be a five, just from what he's doing in the G League. Like it would be really weird for me to play him as a five in all the G League and then put him in the NBA and be play four now. Like, yeah. So I think at the start of the year they were looking at it both in summer league and preseason. They were messing around with things. And if you asked Kai Jones or Borrego or the summer league head coach or Surinkam, like they'd all be like, we don't know like what he is. He could be a four, he could be a five, he's a ball of clay, we're going to mold him. But I think they're looking at him for five for now. But I think it'd be one of those things that because of his, like, if he's able to build his outside shot, which I think we'll probably, he'll look at in maybe a few years from now, we'll keep working on it, but he won't implement it in like the NBA game. If he can stretch the floor, then I think he could play some four because he can guard on the perimeter. Like that's one of the things he loved at Texas. Like he got down really low in his stance and he can guard in space and he can potentially shoot the ball. But yeah, I think five for now.
I've hoped that he was going to be a five. I just feel like with his athleticism at the five, I think it's more of an advantage. I've never really was never a big believer in the jump shot. I think he kind of shoots it in front of his face. Like I wasn't expecting him to be, you know, four threes per 36 even. And I just, the thought of him running the floor with LaMelo, would you say he'd be the best athlete on the team, second to Miles? Or
oh wow,
because I think he is just
you know what,
baby Giannis.
I would maybe say he is a better all-round athlete as Miles, like even better. Like what makes Miles amazing is like the power that he kind of manages to dunk with. Like it's just incredible, and the kind of the cockbacks that he gets. I think Kai is like just so graceful. Like he's quick. He can move his hips really quickly. Like Miles, if he doesn't have time to load up, he actually sometimes struggles to really explode. Whereas Kai like can catch the ball, have two players around him, and there's like a couple of dunks in summer league where he just rips through everyone and explodes, even though like you're like, how have you exploded out of that body position you were in? But he's just springy. So I think Miles probably the best athlete. I think James Book Knight is one of the best athletes on the team. Good I boy. Mean, he's an incredible athlete as well. He doesn't always see it apart from his putback dunks, but he's got some real hops. So I think both of them are kind of in the probably like 80th plus percentile of athletes of NBA players for their position.
Pretty exciting.
Awesome. All right, James, it's been great having you. I've got a couple of questions for you here at the end. How did you become a Bobcats fan? Like what you mentioned earlier that you like won a competition to write for the team for a year. Was that what sparked it? Or like how did you become a Bobcats fan? Because we were objectively the most depressing franchise in the league in 2010 when you started writing for the team. So what brought that on?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been somewhat of like a contrarian. So like the fact that they sucked, like probably quite liked it. I'm not going to pretend. It's ironic because in terms of soccer, I support Manchester United, who are like one of the most winningest Premier League teams there is. But that's because I live around the corner from them. To be honest, I didn't even like basketball until the age of about 15. And then one of my good friends, he ended up playing Div 3 in America, started a school basketball team, got me involved. And I went up to a training and everyone had a jersey. And I was like, oh, I need to buy an NBA jersey, like if I'm going to join the basketball team. So I went to America. I've got my grandma lives out in Alabama. So I went out to Alabama, went to a Reebok store, and there were two jerseys, a Cleveland Cavaliers LeBron James jersey at the time. And then there was, I've actually got it right here, ironically. This Adam Morrison Charlotte Bobcats jersey, who had just been drafted at the time by the Charlotte Bobcats. Ooh. And I was like, I have no idea who Adam Morrison is. I have no idea who Charlotte Bobcats are. Why are they using traffic cone orange as a color? And I was like, I'm going to go for that one because I know who LeBron James is. Like, I don't want to just turn up to training with LeBron James Cavs jersey. That's boring. I want to go off the wall. I didn't quite realize how off the wall I'd gone. Like, I presumed Adam Morrison was going to be like a good player of sorts to like be the only jersey in there with LeBron James. Turns out he was great for Gonzaga. So that kind of started the snowball. And from there, I just started following the team. And that was from watching terrible online grainy illegal streams in the UK as like a 16, 17 year old kid. I applied for the Hornets to be an international fan blogger, their official fan blogger for a season when I was still in school. And then in kind of 2010, I founded my own website called the NBA Lottery Mafia, where I had a kind of a team of writers. And the whole point of the website was to cover the NBA's lottery bound teams. Because at that time, unless you were in the playoffs, you didn't get covered by any outlets. There was no coverage whatsoever, no podcasts, no articles. And I found it as like an international fan. I can't buy the Charlotte Observer and read about the Hornets. I can't chat to people in school. So I was out there looking for content and there just wasn't much of it. So I started when I wanted to get involved in it. I wanted to start introducing content myself and started kind of mainly writing about the NBA more general and kind of went to NBA London 3 or 4 times as a member of the media. And I've written for various websites and done various podcasts over the year and kind of got me to this point. So, it was kind of by accident, really. I was actually able to come over to Charlotte just before the pandemic at Christmas 2019. And we were able to catch a game and got to meet some of the staff there and everything, which was awesome. So, that's my story of stumbling into the Charlotte Hornets.
That's one of the funniest stories I've ever heard, I have to say. The LeBron James versus Adam Morrison. Which one do you choose?
It's a fork in a road. Fork in a road.
That's great. Adam Morrison, one of the most heartbreaking players in Horncats history there. Tell us about your podcast. I guess just like plug your stuff here at the end. We'll put some links in the show notes for people to check out.
Yeah. So myself and my co-host Chase Whitney, who also writes for At the Hive and he also works for the main Celtics G League team. We have a podcast we normally record every 5 days or so. We actually just had Sam Smith on, who you also had on your podcast.
Yeah.
Last week. Yeah, I believe. Yeah, he said he was doing a back to back, and I said at least we got you on the first night of back to back. So we have a weekly podcast. We talk all things Hornets. We've had guests on. We've had Cody Zeller on. We've had Kai Jones on. We've hopefully got one of the coaching staff coming on in a couple of weeks as well. We get everyone on, and then we also have other Hornets fans on, Sombrero Man, Charlotte Man, different writers, James Herbert from CBS Sports. We always try to get a different guest on every week, and we will definitely be having you guys come on at some point. We'll definitely be returning the favor, hopefully, if you're free to have you guys come on, because we always just love chatting Hornets with other Hornets fans, writers. Like, that's how I kind of class myself, as a weird hybrid version of the two. which I think is becoming increasingly okay in the world of journalism. And you can find writing at The Hive as well. And on my Twitter is @British_buzz. And you can find a lot of my thoughts and musings over there.
I'll put all those links in the show notes for the listeners. It's been great, James. And yeah, we'd love to come on for sure.
I have one quick question for James.
Okay.
Let's say we miss the playoffs. We're in the lottery. We somehow get the first pick in the draft. Are you taking?
Ooh. Chet Holmgren.
Okay.
My man. No,
not even thinking about it twice. Like run to the podium, call it in. Maybe a more like realistic guy who, like, the Hornets have got so many like different ways they can do moves through young players, draft picks, everything, flexible contracts. Like Jalen Duren is a guy I think is super interesting, who will be probably top 10, like even maybe top 8. Mm-hmm. So probably isn't going to be available in the Hornets range. But if they really wanted to target someone to move up, Jalen Duren makes a lot of sense for a lot of reasons. It's getting young again. You're going to have to wait a few years. But we're talking about, you know, an elite center prospect who does a lot of the things this Hornet team needs. So, but I'll always be happy to come on and talk draft, close to draft time with you guys. I love talking draft. So,
awesome. It's been great having you on, James.
Appreciate you guys. Thanks.
Yeah, man. Thank you.
Shout out to all the supporters of the podcast from both Winnow and Patreon. Aaron Barton, Dan Joseph, Isaac Black, Xavier Harvin, TC Cunningham, Austin Johnson, Rob McMillan, Brandon Garcia, and Caitlin Furlan. Thanks to everybody for supporting the show. You can find the link in the show notes.
Thank you, everyone that supports, and thank you to everyone that took the time to listen to this. We really appreciate it. And if you want to reach out to us, you can find us at Hornets Podcast on Twitter and Instagram.
All right, Tim, it's been real, bro.
It's been real. Like a Mark, be safe out there.